Today, normal service is resumed on the Homemade Hit Show. Well, at least as normal as it ever gets.
Should be shining, but everywhere clouds. The rain keeps on falling, keeps away the crowds. They're all in the arcades, spending their summer, best spent indoors. Head for the car park and home. Kids playing in an awning on a caravan park. It's too wet. Play swing ball, you'll just have to play cards. Mum and Dad start to bicker as the thunderstorm starts. English summer, spent indoors. Head for the car park and home. One year we went camping. My dad borrowed a tent. Michael Fish promised sunshine, but only in Kent. The extremes of the weather made the tent poles all bent. English summer, best spent indoors. Head for the car and home. Old man reading his paper and says we're the young. This 3 month long rainstorm will do good for the lawn. Could it be global warming or the latest ice age? English summer, best spent indoors. Head for the car park. Thank you. spent indoors. Head for the car park.
Well, hello again and welcome to the Homemade Hit Show.
Episode number 175, because Tony doesn't like 175 for some reason.
And Dave doesn't tell me I missed it. So now, of course, no one has any idea what we're talking about. So let's just throw the phone on the ground for entertainment value.
Yeah, I was just talking at the same time for a little bit and see how that goes. Okay, there we go.
So we started there with a long song. That was Ralph Tong and his song English Summer.
Yeah, it's cool. I like the rainstorm stuff in the background. It was neat. It sounded like a well put together tune.
Right. He wrote that he used Podfarm, Addictive Drums, Reaper, and Purity. I'm not sure if that's a state of mind or something else. But
I don't know.
Yeah. So what's going on now, Dave, in your musical world?
Musical world. I will jump ahead in the list here. I'll tell you about my gig. I just got back from last night from doing my big XTC gig, and it was a ball. I got home at 4 in the morning, and my daughters woke me up at 8 in the morning. But apart from that, I'm doing okay.
So was it a gig or was it a ball? I'm not sure. Clear.
It was sort of a ball with a bunch of drunk guys. Right. And what you call that? But it was really fun. We found it. We were wondering the whole time. So the premise of this is everybody has probably heard this before, but we had a gig where somebody asked us to play a bunch of XTC songs at somebody's bachelor party. And so what it turns out is this guy's brother lives in Cincinnati, and he knew that his brother was a huge XTC fan. That's the groom. And so he said, I'm going to surprise him by having an XTC cover band at his bachelor party. And so, as it turns out, what he did is he actually called up somebody in England who runs the Chalk Hills website, the XTC fan website. And years ago, Jude and I did a tribute song to XTC for a tribute compilation out there. And so this guy apparently looked over the list and he said, hey, one of these guys who did a song on the tribute CD is from Cincinnati. And so that's how they got a hold of us, it turns out. So that was pretty interesting. They had thought about hiring a band from New York and another band from England, but that was going to be much more money than they wanted to spend. But it worked out well.
So they went the cheap route. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so they went the cheap route. Yeah, they still paid us pretty good. They paid us about $850 to do it, so that was pretty good, I thought.
Yep.
So what they did, so basically we just learned a whole bunch of XTC fan songs, and this guy was from Croatia, the groom, and he just was a huge fan, and actually it turns out like 6 of his other friends were XTC fans too, so we played about 20 songs by XTC. We played Statue of Liberty, as you heard, and Snowman, and Generals and Majors, and Towers of London, and most of your hits, and a few, you know, we played Vanishing Girl and Little Lighthouse from the Dukes of the Stratosphere, and a whole bunch of just random songs. And this the group was just eating it up. I mean, it was just the ideal crowd, too, because they were just so, besides being a bunch of guys, but they were just so into it and just were attentive. And, like, I mean, we played from 10 until 2:30, and the whole time they were just, like, calling. You know, we didn't tell them the set list. We kind of kept it as a surprise for them, so every song he'd be like, wow, oh, great, you know, and so It just was really fun. The guy was really, really appreciative and just said, you know, you guys did a fantastic job. And, you know, he was just really excited about it. So
I think if he was a real geek, he could have been pointed out, I'm sorry, you played a minor chord there when that should have been a major.
That's right. We tried to do a pretty good job of hitting those. I even figured out all of Andy's, a lot of Andy's little secret chords. So, yeah, I think we did a pretty accurate job. I flubbed this solo or two in there, but for the most part, we put a lot of work into getting those right. So,
well, I think they
could tell.
Karen,
they even said they even said they've heard live recordings of XTC and they thought we sounded better. So there you go.
So you didn't do a perfect copy then?
right. No, exactly.
So, as usual, this will be Dave's last appearance on the show because now he's a professional. He doesn't fit the ethos of the show. This is an amateur show.
I'm not a professional recordist. I'm just a somewhat professional player, I guess, occasionally.
All right. So we've got a few subjects. We'll jump back to one off Dave's list. But my quick one here was there was more discussion in the forum about the drums. And one of the posters, Kerry Penley, made a comment I kind of found was interesting. I think we friendly disagree on this, but he said he doesn't think the drums are important at all because he's never listened to a song and said, oh, you know, I really like that song except for the drums, or that was great drums, but the rest of the song was rubbish, you know. So, but I think he may have missed the point that Zoetrope and I were kind of making there, which is that the drums are part of the song. So my answer was, you know, do you ever really say that about the guitar or the bass or anything? It's everything is equal, and I think the point we're making is drums are underdeveloped in home recordings most of the time for obvious reasons. So.
Well, and it's like the poor bass player too. You know what I mean? You can. It probably goes both ways. You know, with drums, if they're really crappy, you'll notice and you'll think, oh, those drums sound like crap. Or if it's just a drum machine pattern repeating over and over again, you'll notice them and go, ugh. And if they're good, you know, then you'll just feel like they sound pretty good. You know, this feels pretty solid and, you know, but they won't really necessarily draw attention to themselves. And then if they're really, you know, a lot of songs don't serve themselves well to have some really flashy, crazy drums that you notice a whole lot.
Yep.
So, you know, if they're really, you know, somebody like John Bonham or Keith Moon or something like that, then where they're just playing sort of as a lead instrument, then you'll notice those too. But, you know, it's just like the bass player. I mean, you know, if I'm playing a really good bass line, people aren't going to necessarily look at me and go, wow, look at those bass lines he's playing. But what they will do is when I'm really playing and the drummer and I are grooving well, you'll see everybody moving. You'll see them kind of shaking and kind of really getting into the song. And that, and you know, I know that's because, you know, I'm laying down a really solid bass line a lot of times.
All right.
So.
All right. What next? What's from your list?
Well, I guess the other thing is my work computer or my music computer down in my basement. The hard drive finally gave up the ghost. And so I went ahead and reinstalled and bought a new hard drive and put it in there and ran the recovery disk on there. And that was surprisingly easy. I hung on to the recovery disk from my Compaq and I just put the new hard drive in there. I copied everything off of the old hard drive before it died. I'd done that because I knew it was showing some signs of dying. And then I just took that hard drive out and put a new one in and then stuck in the recovery CD, hit R, and 20 minutes later, I had the software back on the machine like it was when I bought it in 2004. So, it was surprisingly easy.
Yep. I know Dell, for example, provided me a recovery CD for a 7-year-old computer. I went on the website and there was a little note there that if you need a recovery CD, fill in this form, and it was free. So.
Huh. Well, that's pretty handy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and it really brings a new life to the CD computer because anymore, you know, computers aren't really getting that much faster than they were. You know, it certainly isn't going like it used to, and this one's fast enough. And you know, a lot of times, my reason I buy a new computer is mostly because the hard drive's just gotten overburdened with crap.
Yep.
And just starting it over from the beginning is almost as good as buying a new one. And it's, you know, I'm pretty excited about it. And the other thing is then I went ahead and installed Reaper and reinstalled the Line 6 stuff. And that was really very easy. Line 6 does a great job because you have an account and you log in there and it's got everything you own on there and it's got all the license keys right there for you. So it made it really easy. I just re-downloaded the pod farm and the gearbox thing and then all my FX patches and just reauthorized them, and it was a breeze. So
yeah, I think the complaint with that stuff is for people who don't have either good or any internet access on their musical computers. So.
No. Yeah, that'd be a problem if you don't, but you know.
Yep.
If you don't, then you probably have a rotary telephone too, so.
No, I think some people, there is an argument that people make for keeping your music computers off the internet because of the way that the network signal can, you know, I'm not saying I agree with this, but some people get obsessed with the network signal can interrupt your recording inputs and all that kind of thing. So
plug your computer into a router for 5 minutes.
Yeah, you see it a lot on their forums. There are a lot of people complaining because of this, where they, you know, they don't really want those computers on the internet, and there's basically no other way to authorize them. So,
yeah, wah.
Yep.
Can't get with the modern life. I don't know.
I remember.
Sorry to be so harsh.
I'll remember that the next time you have some argument like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm being a little harsh on that one, but I don't know. It's so convenient to download patches and updates and everything. You know, I've downloaded Line 6 just does a great job with getting new patches and new features and stuff like that. And
right, and
getting the FX patches. You know, I did the FX Junkie bundle, and it's got a whole bunch of crazy patches. And I got all the I think it was like the
you got the full set, didn't you?
Yeah, I got the full set. I got everything. And what's the one that has all the amps in it? The Vintage or other?
Yeah, there's Vintage Collectors and the Metal Pack.
Yeah, the Vintage Collectors. Man, I really like some of the new amps that came with it. They've got a couple of really good clean amps, which I felt was kind of missing from what I had already. And they've got one that just has a nice distortion that's just like sort of, you know, what we've been talking about lately, that sort of barely distorted, natural kind of distortion sound. I'll have to look up what the amp model was, but one of those I just really love, and so it's I've been enjoying that. But as I say, it was really easy to get all that down there, and then Reaper is also very easy to reset up because you can basically just download the trial again and then just reauthorize. I paid the $50, and that's really easy. Certainly easier than trying to reauthorize Cubase with a little dongle thingy and all that crap you had to go through. So,
and you've probably indirectly cleaned out all the junky VSTs that you don't really need to use anymore, and just put back the ones that you are using. So,
true. I haven't copied any of those out, but yeah, I may do that. I haven't moved any of those. I've got those on multiple machines anymore because I work, you know, on my work computer. I'll do some mixing, and upstairs I'll do a little mixing. So I've got all my favorite VSTs all over the place, so I can just copy them off. Yeah.
All right, so we had a discussion in the forums on guitar repair that we'll save for later because we should play some music in a minute, I think.
Okay.
And then a couple of little notes I just wanted to bring up. I kind of like Lily Allen as a singer and as a person, but last couple of weeks she set up this big website about don't steal music, and it just kind of really got on my nerves. And apparently she got terribly abused by the fan base, so she took it down. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily arguing that we should steal music, but I just hate it when rich, successful people tell less rich and successful people not to do stuff. It's like, we won't steal music if you charge less for it. How about that?
Right. Yeah. You know, that's totally, I agree with I think the guys on Twit, Leo Laporte always says, do the selling part right and people will buy it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So she's,
and you know, just like Rhapsody, I pay for Rhapsody because it's easy, and you know, instead of trying to download, because the thing I hated about illegally downloading songs is you get all sorts of variety of quality of recordings. You know, sometimes you'll get a good one, sometimes it'll be at 128 and it'll sound kind of crappy, and sometimes you'll be able to find all but three songs on an album or something like that, and that just got annoying. And I really like Rhapsody, where I can just go in there and grab an album and it's all official and it's, you know, good recordings of them, and you just drag it down to your player, and you know, it's very easy. And plus I feel good about paying that because I'm paying for the music. I listen to a lot of music, and I don't mind paying $12 a month because that's about how much I'd spend on CDs anyway. So,
and then this blog she set up started getting loads of comments from other rich, successful artists. You know, oh, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And then, funnily enough, the Radiohead guys jumped in and started saying it was a load of crap. You know, it's like you're basically saying, you know, we have a right to be good to our fans, and we want to give stuff away for free. They deserve it, and our real fans will pay for stuff anyway. And so then this whole argument started up, and then after about 4 days, she took the blog down. So,
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if the if Radiohead had, that's a thing though. That only works if you've already made it. The Radiohead plan, you know, I could put a CD out there and say, I pay what you want, and I'd make $125 off of it.
Right, right. But we've discussed this at length, right? If you just put a CD out there, then that's true. But if you gig all over the country, and then that's not true. An example for is Jonathan Colton, right? He charges very little for his music, and he made his whole career from nothing, you know, and he's not famous, but he makes a good living, and he makes it mostly by playing live shows and selling a few songs on the web. And my other favorite one was a String Cheese Incident, I think they were called, who recorded their whole album by selling tickets to watch them record. You know, they funded it by doing that. So
I wonder how they did with that, though. Yeah.
Well, they, you know, they have a little bit of a reputation, right? So that's, and the other big key, and we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, is they were ready to record. They didn't go 6 months in the studio. They practiced it in their, wherever they practiced, for months and months, had the songs down, and whipped the whole thing out in 3 days. So, you know,
right.
So they, we often compare these guys to us, right? We are not the right people. We're not even trying to make it. So, but sure, there are people out there who are trying to make it. And I think trying to make it by selling $15 CDs is not the answer. You know, you gotta do more.
You gotta establish your interest in your band before you can really do that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's just
agree.
Let's establish interest in a song.
Okay.
So this next song, I felt like this was a slightly different style than we usually get, which was good to hear. So this is Jay McAlisty. I'm good with names, of course. And his song's called Killer with an A. Yeah. Here we go.
Sounds like a little metal in there. I like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Sleep, take a quick look around. Run to the door, slip through the crack. You never know where I'll be found. Been whistling, calling, I run to the hills to howl at the rising moon. Raise my ear and cock my head. Don't worry, I'll be home soon. I'm a cur, I'm a beast, always looking for a beast. Most of all, I'm a dog. Life is all about, but I know it can be fun. Scrapping with cats, sniffing this and that, that's my life under the sun. The whole world going straight to hell, I don't care that, cause I'm free. But I'm only to a homeless girl around the world, or a possum up a tree. I'm a cur, I'm a beast, always looking for a feast. But most of all, I'm a dog.
All right, so that was Jay McAlesty and Killer. And now we're going to briefly return for the pro song of the week, because I found a pro song this week that I really liked. It touched me deep inside.
Aww.
So this is a guy from England. He's he's a low level famous. He's just released I think it's his third album, and he's touring the US on a tour with Gaslight Anthem at the moment, who are those people who sang that 59 Sound song that I like. So he's kind of like a bit like Billy Bragg, a bit more musical, a bit little less political, though actually his new album, which I like a little less than his older stuff, is more political. But so this song is called Substitute. It's about music. It's about songs. I think it's extremely well written, has really clever lyrics. And there's a terrible sadness in this song that comes through really well somehow. So.
Yeah, I got that. It definitely was one of those ones where there's a lot of pro singers just seem to really feel impassioned and sing their lyrics with a passion. And that is definitely one difference I see with pro songs, when the lead singer really impassionately imparts the lyrics, and I think this guy does it well.
All right, let's play it.
Okay.
First girl that I fell for was a fair and faithful fighter. She smoldered with a will to save the world. I did my best to help her, yet I stood shoulder to shoulder on the front lines with my visionary girl. I wish that she had cared for me, but in the end her ideologies occupied the fortress of her heart. I wrote her 15 songs, but still we had to part. And if music was the food of love, then I'd be a fat romantic slob. The music, it's my substitute for love. The last girl that I loved, she was a low and lusty liar. She set my heart on fire but made me choke. Her beauty was a sight to see, but she didn't save it all for me. I found other fires by following the smoke. I wish that she had either cared for me or let me be, but she chased me from my mind and from my home. I wrote her 16 songs, but I ended up alone. And if love is really all that we need, then even all my singing is never gonna save me. Music, well, it's my substitute for love. Well, I've had many different girls inside my bed, but only one or two inside my head. These days I cuddle up to my guitar instead. But oh, what I would give not to stumble but to really fall in love. And I could substitute my singing for the sound of someone sleeping next to me.
All right, I don't think we need to waste our time debating it. It was out there for you to hear, and I liked it, and it was definitely a wordy song, cleverly worded.
Right, yeah, and that's it. So as a songwriter, do we learn how to... Can you learn how to be poetic?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can practice, but I think you really do have to practice, and you have to be... One thing I'm not very good at, right, is I write... Say I have two good lines of lyrics and I need two more, I often just come up with something for those other two, whereas I think these guys are focusing as much attention on all four lines, you know what I mean? So,
right. Yeah, I was listening to some super furry animals in the last few days and been noticing how he drenches his lyrics in a lot of reverb and other stuff, so they're kind of hard to hear. And I really like the little snippets I hear of his words sometimes, but I don't think he's really
comfortable
proud of his lyrics.
Yeah, comfortable with them. Yeah, and that was why, you know, I don't always like that, but that's why I like this song, because there was no, it was real deep, you know, heartfelt lyrics in many ways, but he wasn't hiding them. You know, he's put them out there. I really like that line that said something like, "I've had many girls inside my bed, but only one or two inside my head."
Right, right.
You know, how would we write that? We'd write something like, "I've slept with a bunch of girls, but I've only loved a couple."
Right.
So that's the difference.
Yeah, so can I learn to do that? That's the next question.
Well, I think the thing is that most of us don't do, right, is we really don't work at our lyrics. We write some, we spend some time on them, but we don't really work at them. You know, these guys probably writing them all the time, reworking them, and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, and, you know, I would like to do that. Do I want to spend the time on it?
Right.
I'd like to have the end result without having to work at it.
Yeah, see, what I tend to find is I write lyrics. I've done this a lot recently. I write lyrics like when I've got some spare time and I work, and I do work on them, and I get some nice lyrics, but then I can't get them into a song because I didn't start with a song. You know, I started with just the words. And the more, when I start with a song, I tend to just make up the lyrics quickly at the end, or I take some of my well-written lyrics and try and fit them in the song, and they don't always fit, so then I have to chop them up, and they don't quite work as well again. So
Yeah, I find, you know, when we've done in the past, done some exercises on lyricing, and when I spend a lot of time on the bus or whatever, you know, writing lyrics, you know, it does make a big difference. And when I just spend some, and yeah, certainly that exercise is a good idea to just keep doing it and getting your brain more able to create when you need it. The one thing that I've found that works pretty well is to try to come up with the chorus.
Right.
You know. And then, or just come up with some line that works and have your guitar in hand or whatever and sort of just make that one little line work and then sit down and work on the lyrics to sort of fit around it.
Yeah, and that's mostly what I do on my better lyrical songs. But again, I tend to struggle to fill them out, the whole song out, with good lyrics. That's, you know, I have a few good lines here and there, and then and I know they're not good, but I don't have the patience or time or whatever you want to call it, or skill maybe to work those lines up there. I mean, almost all of us could look at a set of lyrics that we wrote and say, I know, I just bailed out on that line. You know, I just wrote something in there because I had to make it rhyme or fit or whatever it was. So, or I was trying to say something and couldn't figure out any other way of saying it or making it rhyme, so I just said it, you know.
And then you certainly aren't going to sing those lyrics in an impassioned way. Probably.
Right, right.
Yeah, so which is kind of your example with Frank Turner. I mean, this is the exact opposite. This is a guy who seems to, the lyrics are the thing, and, you know.
Yeah, I think if Crax is listening, he should give him a listen. He's a political singer in a lot of his songs and very direct. I think he kind of reminds me, not musically, but just approach-wise, he does remind me of Crax. So.
Yeah. I was going to say that earlier, but I thought we've been mentioning cracks too many times lately.
There's never a reason not to mention a crack.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So just a little briefly here, from the poetry and ethereal to the technical. There's a lot of discussion in the forum this week on guitar repair and what have you. That was and I literally, as I said in the forum there, I don't even know how to change my own strings. So this whole thing went above me a little bit. So there's a lot of discussion on types of strings and all the ways to adjust your guitar. And then I think Dave had a book he was talking about. So.
Yeah, first of all, I think that's just pathetic that you don't change your strings. But
I pay a guy to do it.
You pay a guy to change your strings?
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy. He knows the guy who wipes my butt.
Right, right. I see. I understand. Okay, but all right. I just had to say that. So, but no, yeah, I got the. I've sort of got the bug with buying the new guitars, and to go on with this. This will be this installment of Dave Buys a New Guitar segment for the week. But a friend of mine gave me his copy of Guitar Player Repair Guide, which is done by Guitar Player Magazine, I believe. And it gets into all the details of how to set up a guitar, how to get the neck straight, or how to get the neck with the proper curvature, and how to measure things with a little, you know, with a ruler to tell exactly how high your strings and how much relief you should have, and how to tell if a fret's high. And it's, you know, I never studied this before. And I don't know why I did. And now I'm looking at all my guitars and going, wow, I should lower the action on this or raise the action on this one a little bit. And this neck is not really straight enough. And, you know, it's really good stuff to know. And it's fairly technical, but I tell you, you know, and as Sun God told me, you know, said even if you don't do it yourself, it's good to learn all this stuff so that when you do take it into some place to get it set up, you'll know what to tell them and you know what you're looking for.
And I think that the guy who does the maintenance on my guitars has some equipment, right, that I don't have for holding the guitar in place and all that, that would make it a little more difficult for me to do unless I wanted to buy all that stuff. But then, as Steve said there, it would help if I understood what was going on. But I thought his name was what's that guy called? Steve.
That was when I was tired last week. I don't know why I'm not stumbling over everything today. I should be, because I got in at 4:30 and was woken up at 8. But
yeah.
But no, I seem to be doing a little more coherent this week. But
right.
Yeah, no, Stephen, very helpful once again. A lot of other people have been chiming in with good suggestions. The other thing was the Elixir strings. I've never really thought about using those coated strings.
I have some of them on one of my guitars, and you know, of course, I can't tell the difference as usual. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, actually, my Telecaster I have here under my desk is a little the strings are getting a little grimy and old, and apparently if Zoetrope is crowing about these too, I don't think he's particularly spends a lot of money for no reason on guitar strings, so it's right. I may have to try those things.
Yeah, the other thing that Steve said that I actually did understand and agreed with is that having a wound G string, something about almost every guitar I've ever played of where you hit that G string and you've got a nice solid, you know, through the top three, and then you hit the G and it's like twang, and having a wound G string seems to fix that one. So
And I don't know, do you know what gauge strings you use?
I cannot remember, but I do know, you know, I have a packet around somewhere. It's like a 10 or I think it's a 10, but you know, I always use the same ones. I'm not kind of random, but I always keep the last packet, so the next time I go and get any, I could remember what it was I bought. So
I always try nines. I always use nines, but then I try tens, and then they're too thick, but maybe I just need to get used to tens. I was reading that Stevie Ray Vaughan uses 13s,
right,
or used to use 13s. That's just insanely large.
So Lee Wright, who's in the forum, he gave this whole thread just at the end of the day here about trying different things and all that. And at least for someone like me, I'm not sure that's true. I think what happened with me is I asked around when I started. Someone said use tens, and I just used tens. I don't need to try nines and eights and 12s and all this. I'm happy with my tens, and you get used to them. And I probably would struggle with anything else at this point. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm used to nines, and I should probably just start putting tens on and get used to doing those, because I always hear those play a little better.
And the other interesting thing in the forums there is how such a technical subject can still have so many different opinions on it. Don't use this. Should use that. No, well, this won't make any difference. And, you know, it's like...
Right. Yeah, my issue is the my SX guitar, that it's going out of tune a lot, and I was thinking, well, I'll just replace the tuning pegs. And those guys are everybody pretty much seems to be telling me, no, that's probably not the problem. Maybe it's my bridge or something else, but it's probably not the tuners, which is surprising. But
All right, let's move along, I guess.
Okay. Yes.
So we challenged Dave Chick to make a song, and he made a song, and we're going to play it now after we say goodbye, I guess. So it's homemadehitshow.com, homemadehitshow.com/forum. Send me your songs, one song per email. Anything from you?
Yes. Oh, yeah, just thanks for listening, everybody. And maybe next week we'll get back into actually talking about some songwriting techniques. I guess we did talk about lyric writing techniques here, so
yeah.
We got back to it a little bit. It's getting a little technical.
I've been requesting segments from Dave, and now he might have some more time. He might do some, so.
Yes, now that I'm done with this XTC gig, I am ready to write some music. I have all kinds of things I want to do. So, Tony had some good ideas on some segments. Then I'm probably obliged. I still want to try the thing with the microphone and reflections again.
Right.
So I might try that one at some point too. So this thing we had Dave do was we told him he needed Dave tends to record songs that are really well thought out and orchestrated with lots of parts and lots of thought. And Tony said, I want you to write one in 2 hours. Just write it and record it and get it done in 2 hours. And so this is the result of that.
And I believe he took 3 hours. And he also cheated, because before the 3 hours began, he thought about what he was going to do. So it's like he used a load of extra time.
Yeah. Oh, he loaded it down with all of 3 hours.
And, of course, it's the wonderfully named Tony is a Superstar from Dave Chick.
That sounds like a winner, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to play it.
Or delusional. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay, here it goes.
Tony is a superstar. Tony is a superstar. He's the best by far. Tony is a superstar. All guys called Dave's a ass, 'cause Tony is a superstar. Wow, I thought that was really good.
That was fantastic, Dave. That you really you approximated Tony's voice very well too. That was, and I really salute you for showing Dave all or Tony all that respect there.
Yeah, all right. Well, now let's play the real song. Ha ha.
Okay. All right. Bye bye, everybody.
Bye.
Woke in the morning, it was Friday morning. Headed to the kitchen for some coffee. Got the kids to school and the place cleaned up, so now I could start in on my day. The day flew by and before I knew it, iTunes had fetched me some new goodies. I smiled to myself, there was the homemade hit show waiting for me to press play. Hey, wait, what did he say? Write a song in less than a day. He must be nuts, three sheets to the wind. Hey, Tony, lay off the gin. Gotta write a song, can't make it work. Everything is going all wrong. Ah, Tony's a jerk. Can't think of a tune, it's coming up blank, and the chords are sounding all the same. Try out some words, maybe that'll start it. Nah, it's all sounding really lame. To make matters worse, the next homemade hit show, he had to kick me when I was on the ground, demanding a song with just my voice and guitar. Ha! Your drums in your face, see ya around. Wait, it's almost there, almost done, my nightmare. The lyrics suck and the tune is a mess. Just the bridge and no more stress. I'm writing a song, I can't say it works. Some things are just all wrong. Ah, Tony's a jerk. Superstar.